Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today, when she was 17 years old, she was scouted at a music concert in Leeds, and that was her way out. A modeling agent asked her if she was interested. She got to London. She never looked back. Her real dream always to be an actress, and that modeling moment afforded her classes and coaching and a way to her dream of being an actress, and now we see her weekly on the series Mayor of Kingstown, and she is phenomenal. What a journey, and you're going to get to hear all about it in a minute. Welcome Emma Laird to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey everyone, my guest today is Emma Laird. Emma was most recently recognized by Variety as one of the 10 Brits to watch in 2021, and she currently stars in the Paramount series Mayor of Kingstown opposite Jeremy Renner and Diane Wiest and a whole host of incredible performers. She is a native of Scotland, but we have her now here in the U.S. I am so thrilled to welcome Emma to the podcast. Hello, welcome to Little Known Facts.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so thrilled. For listeners at home, Emma and I are having a crazy thing where she can see me, but I can't see her. And that seems terribly unfair. But I have gotten to see you episode after episode, crush it in Mayor of Kingstown. And so congratulations on really astonishingly beautiful, complex, painful work in your premiere series. It's pretty extraordinary.
Thank you. Yeah, it's I'm trying not to be so harsh on myself, because I guess the comparison is alongside a wonderful actor, Jeremy Renner, who's done it for X amount of years, and this is my first thing. And so I guess I'm trying to remember that and go easy on myself. And I've kind of realized that I actually prefer performing rather than seeing the end product.
yes, you know? It can be so painful, isn't it? Do you, I mean, other than obviously when you do ADR or looping, there are times throughout production where you are forced to look at scenes if there's some sort of technical thing that needs fixing, right? I mean, that's just part of the job. But do you watch the episodes, or how have you learned to handle what that feeling is that you're describing?
I have watched the episodes, because, and I always will, I think yeah. Everything that I do, because it's so exciting and I'm so new to it. I was so proud to be just a part of this series.
Right.
And I loved the story. So, and I also did kind of want to critique myself and it's been helpful. First, it was hard to kind of see scenes that I weren't happy with, but then on a whole, I'm proud of what I did. And so yeah, of course I watched it, and I think, yeah, I'm just getting used to what I thought I did in my head and how it felt on the day. And then some scenes I loved that I didn't expect to, and some scenes I don't like, which
so
in the moment, I know it's crazy. It's just, I think the hardest part as an actor is kind of letting it go to the edit bay for me, and just not having any control in post-production. But I am super proud of it. And I have these pinch me moments where I really don't understand how I'm here. So
I know it's such a fabulous cast. I mean, you don't have, you know, most of your scenes are with these guys on the show, but obviously I would imagine having the brilliant Diane Weiss just in the landscape of this thing. Yeah. Yeah.
I went to set one day because I was so excited to meet her. And I said to, we had five different directors, two episodes.
Right.
And the guy in the second block called Ben Richardson, who was directing those, I went to set and I was like, Ben, I see Diane. Like, come and introduce me to her. And I was so scared. I was terrified. I'd seen her in these really kind of villainous roles and she just seemed like such a powerful, which she is, and strong and wonderful woman. But I didn't know if she would be nice to me or even know who I am. And she saw me. She was like, of course, Emma, it's so lovely to meet you. And she was really like a mother to me. She kind of had obviously read the scripts and said, you know, how are you going to cope with all of this? And we'd not really shot any of the heavy stuff yet. And so I didn't really know what I was in for. And I was like, oh, it's fine. I just go to set and I do the job and I'll go home. I'm an actor. And she was, and of course that wasn't the case when it came to shooting all the really heavy stuff. I kind of broke a little bit, but she was really like she gave me a lot of good advice. And we'd be sat next to each other sometimes in makeup, and she texted me when the show was about to come out with some really lovely things. And she really kind of took care of me. And, you know, we had a lot of people in and out on that show and a lot of people leaving to go and do the Yellowstone prequel. And she was kind of one of those constants for me on the set of, really just being a wonderful woman in what is predominantly a man's world.
You know, I'm curious when you talk about sort of what it is to see yourself, to remember the take on or the scene on the day, and then see sort of how it translates. And then, of course, as you described, then it goes to the editor and the director and the producers, and sort of they decide what the performance ultimately is going to be. And, you know, the take you loved best might be like the back of your head for, you know, like you have no idea what they're going to use in the actual thing. But like, I know that you started out modeling. And so I wonder, did you also feel like after you would do a shoot and you looked at the pictures, was that equally distressing in a way? Or what's the difference in terms of how you respond to your own craft or work modeling versus now this?
I think with modeling it was always just like I as a kid just kind of wanted to escape my hometown, and modeling provided that for me. It was never something that I really loved, so I would see pictures and I would, you know, see all these shoots and stuff, but it never really interested me. Also, I would never look at a picture and think, oh, how can I improve on my next job? Or there's less to critique, really. And it's all just kind of surface value, I guess, like, oh, how pretty do I look? Whereas with acting, I just care so much about it. And it really feels like, I mean, it is my entire life revolves around this art of acting. And so it's very different just in that sense, because I'm watching it and it's much more exciting. Mm-hmm. It's to have something tangible, and I've been working towards this for what feels like many years. And so, and it's almost like the first thing that the industry is going to see. So I'm also, that's why I'm critiquing it and care so much about it. Whereas modeling was just kind of like, this is how I make money. This is how I fund acting. And I never really cared much about modeling.
Well, can you talk a little bit about that? Not the modeling part, but you said you grew up. So were you in your bio, obviously it says you're a native of Scotland and now you're living in LA. You know, I'm sure you still go home. Tell me about when you say like getting out of my little town and sort of a means to an end, as it were. Where did you grow up? Tell me a little bit about how performing came into your consciousness. Who was in the house with you? What was their response to the art? Sort of, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I grew up in this really small town, actually in England, called Chesterfield. And I had, you know, I had great parents. I have got three younger brothers. It was never like I had a really kind of traumatic childhood. I just always remember having this feeling as a kid of like, life will be better when I'm an adult. I just wasn't particularly I wasn't unhappy, but I didn't love my childhood. I remember, like, I'd say to my mum, God, I hate school. And like, I had friends, I just didn't enjoy, it just didn't feel like great to me. And I remember saying to my mum, like, you know, I hate school. And she was like, they're the best days of your life. And I was like, God, I fucking hope not, because yeah. And so I never really knew what it was that I wanted to do as a kid, but yeah. I just knew that I just wanted to get away and that there was more for me outside of where I grew up.
And, so when it says you're a native of Scotland on your bio, is that's not exactly...
No, I have a lot, half my family are Scottish.
Got it.
My dad was born in, I think my dad was born in Germany, actually. I might be wrong.
But okay, all my family, you grew up in Chesterfield.
Yes. And okay. All my family are military. So my mum and dad met in the army. My brother's also in the military now. And I kind of grew up bouncing around military bases. My mom and dad would live on those, and I like to say that, like, kids would grow up kind of seeing fireworks. I'd go to like bomb disposal displays or like bomb displays where they'd be out in a field and they'd kind of detonate these explosives.
Wow.
And they'd be like, hold this grenade. like not an active grenade, obviously. I don't think the military would do that, give a child a grenade. But right. Yes, it's I grew up in a military background. And
And so were you moving around a lot, or were you on certain bases for sort of a significant amount of time?
My dad moved around a lot. My mum and our family home was always, we only kind of lived in two or three houses, I think, from what I remember.
Yeah.
But my dad was all over the place. And so that was fun. But yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like I guess subconsciously I always gravitate towards the arts and like film and that kind of escapism through fiction and books and whatnot. But it's weird because I had this memory the other day of my drama teacher who really didn't like me at school, and she had kind of the favorites who were like the rich kids. So it was funny because it's like the only subject that I actually really enjoyed at school still didn't seem like the arts didn't seem like me. Yeah. So it all worked out better when I left, and when I my mum still has, I think she's proud of me, but they still have reservations, you know. It's still, she still kind of asks me, when am I getting a real job and what's my backup plan? I'm like, there is not a backup plan. It's either this or failure.
So you are such a kind of revolutionary in your own family in terms of like the way you see the world and the way you're sort of operating in such a completely different way. When were you able to sort of pivot, like get out of school, not pursue a life in the military or pursue your education in a more traditional way? What was sort of the, and then this modeling thing you mentioned. So sort of what were the steps to kind of get to how we find you today on Mayor of Kingstown?
Yeah. So it actually was modeling. I was in a field when I was 17. I was at a festival called Leeds Festival, which is notoriously muddy and dirty and messy. And,
It was a music festival.
I was in this field and this lovely lady came up to me and said, have you ever thought about modeling? And all my friends were, of course, just laughing, and I'm getting these pictures taken. And then I went to London maybe 2 weeks later to do like a test shoot. And I moved to London when I think I was just turning 18. So that
all because of that moment, that woman
one moment
saw you
in a field,
and you pursued it, like it happened.
Yeah, I mean, it was like obviously exciting, like a 17-year-old kid being told they should model. You have all these weird standards of what, and you know, kind of expectations of what the fashion industry is from, like America's Next Top Model, which is like really not the case. It was,
yeah.
I met some wonderful people. It funded my acting career. It got me out of my hometown. And I have wonderful memories from, you know, I think I did it for like 6 years. But it's also a really awful industry. There's no union. It kind of was good in a way because it made me really desensitized to nudity. And I think that serves in this show because I'm naked a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, you really, you know, you had to get changed in a park or in a room full of 30 people. And this is like also like underage girls that we're talking about. And I have a real problem with the fashion industry. And I wrote a big email to my agents when I left them last year. And it's just still kind of, they didn't really care about what I was saying. And it's just, I really resent it in many ways, as grateful as I am to have, you know.
What were sort of the the bullet points of that email, sort of the things that were just still make you boil when you think about it.
Yeah, I don't remember it exactly, but I said I definitely gave examples of what I'd been exposed to in the industry and things that they should probably fix. And examples being, if there's a girl who's under 18 and you're sending her to a photographer's house in Italy, there needs to be a chaperone, or there needs to be someone else there, or the photographer needs, in fact, why are we even at the photographer's house, particularly if it's a male, it needs to be in a studio. I found it insane when I got publicists and we'd go to shoots and they would be with me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never felt more looked after. And it's just, there's a lot of things. And there's also a lot of sketchiness in terms of, I don't know, like payments and, I can't remember what the email was, but it was very
you've given me such a kind of clear entree into what pissed you off and should be changed.
It turned me into a pretty good feminist, I think, which it just made me aware of what it is to be a woman
And when you go to London, right, like you just turned 18, it sounds like, are you suddenly just put in an apartment through this agency with a bunch of other models? Yeah. Do you have friends that you already know, or are you on your own?
I didn't have friends, because this was another thing. Like, modeling gave me a very bad eating disorder for the best part of 4 or 5 years. And so like my life was just work. And so I was in London and it kind of all went by in a kind of daze, to be honest. So we would go from city to city and stay in model apartments and rack up these huge bills from the agencies charging a fortune for the model apartments that would just go in your account. So anytime you'd earn money, it's like, oh, but you've got to pay all this rent. it's very sketchy. But it was great. I mean, you know, there is that, but it was also, there was good sides to it as well. And eventually I did meet really good friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful to it. But that's not to say that I don't acknowledge all the stuff that needs to change. Maybe at some point in the future, I'd like to kind of go back to that world, not to model, but to kind of, I don't know, do a TED talk or something.
Reshape it. And because it sounds like from what you're saying, it's not just your particular experience. That's a pretty normal experience for many girls starting out, regardless of how high level the agency is.
Yeah. They told me to lose weight for the best part until last year. Like for the past 6-7 years, that's all I've been told is like lose weight. And at the start, that's what I did because I was so keen to do it. I was like, I'll lose weight. Mm-hmm. And then they actually told me they told me to gain weight at one point because they were like, oh, you're not going to work now. You're too skinny. And it's like, oh, okay. And what was really refreshing about coming onto this set was I almost predicted that, you know, Taylor or someone or one of the producers or I don't know who involved in the project would tell me, I have to lose weight. That's all you hear about entertainment, right? You know, Jennifer Lawrence saying she's always getting asked to lose weight. And it was really refreshing to actually not have any even conversation about my body prior to being cast or after, even after being cast, sorry. It was just, it felt more like, I mean, I would hope they were casting me because of what they'd seen in the audition as opposed to what my body looked like.
Talk about the audition, because this is, you know, you've done some shorts, but this is like you went from 0 to 60, as they say. Did you tell me about the audition process for this series?
Yeah, of course. So it was almost this time last year, actually. It was about January, February time, and everything had kind of exploded. I was really fortunate to get like a Netflix movie. And we confirmed that, and then I read the script for this Kingstown, which shot at the same time, and I kind of took a huge leap of faith. I'd pretty much quit modeling, and I was kind of broke because I was paying my coach in the pandemic, and you know, I took a huge risk and dropped this Netflix movie, and then I just kept dropping projects. Everything kept coming, which was wonderful. I got a Nolan series, and then The Boys were doing a spin-off at the time last year, and I just kept dropping project after project for this man who wouldn't cast me over Zoom during a pandemic and a snowstorm in Texas. And he was like, I've got to fly you out. And I was like, well, fly me out, please, because I really, really need to confirm something. I can't take any more risks.
Yeah.
And, it was really stressful, but I was so invested in this script and the kind of arc that she has in this series. And so yeah, I did a self-tape. It came through in about January or February last year. And the next day, Kathy Sandrich, who was casting, said, you know, we sent it to Taylor. He really loves it. He wants a phone call with you. And he gave me some notes and then to retape with the notes and then a new scene. And then he liked it again. And then that was when he was like, we're not casting over Zoom. And I think about 2 weeks later, he flew me to Texas and I had to quarantine for 7 days in this hotel. And then I went to his ranch in Texas and I was so nervous, man. I was a mess and I just kept talking. So I did the scenes with Taylor and Kathy and Kathy's assistant or casting associate. And after these scenes, I really got there emotionally, like in the scenes. But then after I was like, I had verbal diarrhea. I was just like, yeah, like I really feel like I'm just like ready to go on set. And, you know, it feels like the right time. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I just, and then I was like drinking so much water and I like started choking on water at some point. I bet Taylor, I honestly thought I'd fucked it up, not from the scenes, but from what I was saying after the scenes.
Right.
And then he called me the next day and said I'd got it. And I was crying all day and I was so, so happy. And then he was like, listen, what are you doing tomorrow? I was like, nothing. I fly back in the evening. And he was like, come to my ranch. I'll give you a tour. And my manager was in town. My manager had flown in. And so me and my manager went to Taylor Sheridan's ranch the next day after I'd been cast. And it was nice because I actually got to speak to him like a human and not like of scared mess.
Exactly.
That I was the
like,
day before.
As if they had, you know, made the tape go much faster than it's meant to
yeah.
go. So first of all, you know, there are many people watching the show who would have no idea you're not an American. And if they're not, if they're not good Googlers, or, you know, just reading a lot about the show. In fact, there are so many people on the show, in many of these shows, you know, who aren't American. But tell me about working on this accent. And is that something you learned specifically for the audition for this part?
Yeah. Oh, I love talking about this.
All right. Sure.
So I really randomly just plucked this accent out of thin air for the audition. Like,
it wasn't something you did as a kid. You weren't mimicking someone that you knew specifically.
My stepdad still to this day kind of takes the piss out of my accents because I, as a kid, I would do them and they would be terrible. Accents were never my thing, but I had a really unconventional way of getting to be signed. So I had to go to America first. So I had to learn the American accent for like 6 months straight because none of my auditions were with an English accent. And anyway, so I was pretty good with the American and I have no idea why I chose. It's a North Carolina accent. I don't know if I mean. And so I chose it. And then when I got the part, I spoke to my dialect coach and I sent her my audition scene. And I was like, let's figure out where this girl is from.
Yeah,
and
let's get really specific. Yeah.
Yeah. And we kind of narrowed it down to North Carolina. And then we kind of started to build a backstory together. Her parents' jobs are in the script. So we kind of figured out how much income they would get each year. And then we kind of built this backstory based on, you know, what house she would live in, where she would go to school, really kind of filling in all the gaps based on what wasn't in the script, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I just really, there was, I Taylor said on the phone, he was like, yeah, she can be wherever you want her to be from. And I was like, okay, cool. Let's do this accent. And I still don't know why. It just felt right, you know.
So Taylor Sheridan, who is the creator of this show and has sort of, you know, he has Yellowstone. He has another show coming up. Was an actor for a long time. Mm-hmm. A lot of people know him from, you know, different TV shows that he was on before. I don't even know that they realize it's the same guy who is sort of pivoted.
Sons of Anarchy.
Exactly. Like he's pivoted to this whole other unbelievably successful career.
Crazy.
Yeah. I'm wondering, if, because he was an actor, do you feel like there's a sensitivity or a way that he works that's particularly, I don't know, like generous in terms of what it is to be an actor as opposed to someone who just is concerned with the production values and the camera and sort of the technology of it all? Yeah.
I think what's great about Taylor is that he really writes with so much depth, not just for the lead or the leads. It's really there. He's thought about every character so in depth, and he was also an acting coach.
So
on the phone call the day that he cast me, he said, this is really just blowing smoke up my own ass, but it was really sweet of him, but I think he coached Jennifer Lawrence a while back, because he said, you know, what I saw in you is something that I've only ever seen in one other person, and that was, you know, 10 years ago with Jennifer Lawrence or something.
Right.
So he really, and we did coaching exercises together in that room. And so he's very generous. He understands, what it is to be an actor. And I just think the depth that he writes characters with is something really special, because, you know, sometimes you might just focus on the lead, or you could ask him any question about anything with any of those characters, and he would just know it. Mm. And he also had been writing this series for 10 years. So.
Yeah, I read that, which is just an incredible thing to finally, I mean, to imagine, like, for him, just the idea that it finally happened. It's just an incredible, incredible thing. And what a lesson in believing in something and just not stopping until it happens, no matter how long it takes. It's such an inspirational, aspirational.
I don't understand how he's done what he's done. I mean, he's an incredibly talented writer, but it's just his success is, it's crazy. He's got so many shows coming out in the next few years as well. I also don't understand how he writes as much as he does with keeping the quality there.
Yeah. And also shooting, you know, it's not like he's writing and then can stop writing to shoot. I mean, it's crazy. So Jeremy Renner is someone who, you know, certainly became a household name in the last few years and is probably, like, I don't know, 25 years older than you, would you say? Mm-hmm. Something like that?
Yeah, a couple, yeah.
Is that something that you guys have talked about in terms of, I mean, why don't we back up a little for the three people who haven't watched the show? The mayor of Kingstown, my brief description of it is a town where everything in this town revolves around the prison. Like, that's where all the employment comes from. That's where people either live in the prison or outside the prison or know someone in the prison. It's like the way LA is in acting industry. This seems to be the prison equivalent of it.
It really is.
And you are sent to this town by, like, a Russian mobster who, for what purpose? Why are you sent to Kingstown to torture everyone and yourself?
So my boss Milo, who's played by the wonderful Aidan Gillen, who I just adore, it's kind of ambiguous. Like, we don't really know the full story between Milo and Mike and what's going on there. Milo's in serving a life sentence in one of the prisons.
Right. And Jeremy Renner plays Mike.
Yeah, and Milo seems to have some kind of hold over Jeremy's character. You know, Jeremy's kind of doing his bidding for him a little bit, and you're kind of left wondering why.
Right.
But I get sent in as a tactic to, you know, basically sleep with Jeremy's character so that Jeremy will then do something else for Milo. We don't really know why, and that was never explained to me. And I always look at it from the perspective of, well, my character wouldn't know why.
Exactly.
So it was never important for me to know why.
You're doing Jeremy, your job.
Jeremy might have had a conversation with Taylor Sheridan and they might know the secrets of it.
Right.
But for me, my character would have just been told to go somewhere and no questions were asked. And I'm in this little fantasy world that I've kind of created where I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll go here. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't ask questions. And
your character would say her job is, what does she do?
Oh, she's a sex worker, but like a high-end sex worker, you know. She I don't think she ever really realized the magnitude of and the seriousness and severity of the situation that she's actually in with these people. I mean, she would have known that Milo was in prison, of course, but she wouldn't have known the severity of it until she went to Kingstown, until she kind of, spoiler alert, gets beat up. That's when everything kind of shifts for her and she realizes mm-hmm. that she's in real danger.
We, you know, as the audience have a sense that there's this young girl. We know that at some point in the series, it's revealed that she has been with really high profile political people, American mm-hmm. politicians. We know that there's this Russian man in jail who is sent for her. And we know that pretty quickly in the series, Jeremy Renner's character sort of takes her under his wing, yeah. I would say. And although she's been sent to be his, you know, a sex worker, as you call it, their relationship changes.
Yeah, I think he really... I mean, I don't want to speak for Jeremy because I think there's been... We've had... Not opposing opinions, but we each had our own opinions about, you know, our characters and the dynamic and things like that. But I kind of feel like at the start, he's kind of like, fuck this girl, you know, sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
Little known fact, you can swear on Little Known Fact.
Yeah. I feel like I ask that in every interview because I just end up swearing.
I know. Well, that's their problem. They can bleep if they need to bleep. You need to be uncensored.
I think at the start Jeremy's character really doesn't want anything to do with her, but then, you know, he can't deny that she's a woman in a town full of really dangerous men. I think he starts to feel a responsibility for her, and then when he sees what there was a lot of awful things that were cut from episode
oh,
17.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So it's...
There
was even more, which is why they probably cut it, you know?
Okay.
And so Jeremy saw...
But you still had to do it.
We still had to do it, yes. Mm-hmm. It was hard seeing that... I didn't know until I watched the episode that the stuff hadn't been cut. And I was like, we shot that. Which is always going to happen, you know? And I really completely understand the choice to cut it, but... You know, she goes through some really awful stuff and Jeremy goes into the house and sees what's kind of happened to her. And I think he really feels a responsibility in a way towards the end. And I would hope slowly starts to like her a bit more and sees her as human instead of a weapon to be used against him.
There's so much that is asked of you in this show. I mean, when you talk about your modeling career to a certain degree anesthetizing you to certain uncomfortable situations that maybe you shouldn't have been anesthetized to, right? It sounds like your takeaway is actually that was all not okay and I wasn't protected. Yet there are still demands of the role. And for people who haven't seen the show yet, there's just a lot of brutal things that happen to Iris, who is the character that Emma plays in this town that's kind of filled with a lot of bad guys who are using Iris, your character, as a pawn in a game that they're playing, even if you don't even always know what the game is, or if no one even knows what the game is. But you still had to sort of do it. And I want, you know, you talked about having a coach. And obviously the idea that you were so clear about wanting to leave modeling and finding your way toward someone who can help you. You got obviously just the most incredible, you just have such incredible instincts. And it sounds like that's what Taylor saw immediately, that even without the years of experience, there's this intuitive sense of how to do what you do, which is very exciting. But then, you know, you're also being asked to do things the minute someone calls action that are really emotionally raw. And, you know, I don't know if it says in the script, she cries here or, you know, whatever, but there are certain demands that and expectations. So do you have, sorry, this is such a long question, but you have someone on set with you? Are you working on this stuff alone in your, I don't know if you were in a hotel the whole time you shot this thing, wherever you're living, like how are you kind of figuring it out? I don't know how much rehearsal you guys get. You're shooting during a pandemic, some of this stuff. So it just must all be very complicated.
Yeah, it only really got hard about halfway through because it was when all the dark stuff started to come and I just remember this monologue, and it felt like really the first time that I'd spoken. And, you know, I'd had a scene with Jeremy in episode 4, but then it was just this big monologue at the end of episode 8, which was like the first thing that we really shot for Iris. And mm-hmm. I broke on that day in a good way. I think, as cliche as it sounds, I felt like I needed to emotionally break for it to kind of be authentic. And you know, I'd ring my friend, I'd get home at 2 a.m. or something, and my friend would still be awake in England, and I would just say, can I just ring you real quick? And oftentimes I would just kind of break down on the phone. I'd be like, I don't really know why I'm crying. And it was just a really sensitive time for me. But there was a producer, because like I said, like people were kind of in and out of this show, and because it was like a COVID hotspot, we couldn't have set visits, and I wouldn't have wanted to kind of have, you know, my team there or anything like that. I didn't feel like that was necessary. But there was a producer called Michael Friedman, who's kind of Taylor Sheridan's producing partner and has been with him for a very long time, from the start, I think. He's done Yellowstone with him. And anyway, Michael was my constant there as well. He really kind of, we'd be in closed sets, and I'd be like in the bath naked, and I would be about to go, and I'd be like, where's Michael? Could someone just get Michael? And just be like, damn, I wish Taylor was here. And Michael would be like, well, use it, Emma, use it. And he would just come and hold my hand. And in between takes, I'd be like kind of crying on the street, smoking a cigarette. he'd just hug me. And I had people on set that really supported me. But at the same time, you know, it was like I had a job to do, and I would kind of, well, what I learned a lot on this set was just feeling like I could take up space and ask for things and not be a diva, which is something that I think about a lot, feeling like a diva in this industry. And it's really just me asking for my chair to be sat in a private tent, so I don't have to speak with, you know, sometimes I'd love to speak with, you know, the day players and the entire cast. But some days when I'm about to shoot something really heavy, I couldn't do that. And I wanted to be alone. And so it was just learning that I could ask for those things as a newcomer, because no one really knew who I was on set. No one knew who I was. I think no one reads the crew don't read the script. So they didn't know if I was there for the day or if I was there for 5 months. And I think at the end, it felt like I was loved and supported, but at the start it was definitely trying to find my way and kind of demand my space and create like a safe space for myself. But I had good support. Yeah.
Did they have, you know, there's this new thing that didn't exist when I first started, but it's been on the last couple of shows that I've done. If I've had quote unquote intimate kinds of things to do. And so they now have, pardon me, intimacy coaches.
Yeah.
So was that a part of your set? Because talk about vulnerable, intimate moments. And I know that, like, there were times where my co-star and I wanted that and were sort of, and then there were times where we are like, we so appreciate your being here,
but
that actually we're good. I'm not uncomfortable.
I completely agree. And I think it's like going back to that modeling thing. It's like, you know, sometimes people are okay with changing, but you always need to have the option of like addressing, you know, it's that you've always got to have the option. And so, yeah, we had an intimacy coordinator, but it's funny because my first day on set, we didn't have one. And my first day on set was all the strip club stuff. So literally my first ever day acting was being like naked in front of like 30 background. And I was okay with it. Like she emailed me, and we always had communication, so that wasn't anyone's like real fault. But I didn't really care. I think the only time that I really needed that intimacy coordinator was when I wanted to check that the rest of the cast was okay with my nudity, because I think that's what people forget as well, is if I'm saying, yeah, I don't want to wear the sticker because we're in a bath and I just would rather be naked. You should still make sure that the other cast members are okay with
interesting
that, you know?
Right. I so, think we do forget that. Yeah. There's so much that has been asked of you. And you said earlier that Diane, you know, in a makeup trailer, even if you guys weren't doing scenes together, sort of had some advice. Is there anything that you can share? Because she's someone we all look up to and admire
she's
so much. Yeah. And everything she does, I'm like, okay, she's in Mayor of Kingstown. She's in Hannah and Her Sister. She's in Edward Scissorhands. Like, I've seen her on Broadway. Like, her breath and scope of characters that she's taken on and how different they all are. But just like you said, like the power and the integrity, even though I don't think I've ever heard her yell in character, right? Like there's this calm.
But that's even scarier than sometimes. That's even like, that's more powerful, right?
That's what my kids always say. They're not scared when I'm yelling at them. They're scared when I'm quiet. I'm like, oh,
because I think it's that thing, like, you only need to yell when you've not got power, right? Yeah. When you've got all the power in a scene, you're just like calm, and that's what's the scary thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, she kind of gave, I mean, the one of the main things I remember is her saying, you have to wipe your shoes before a scene and after a scene. And that was
literally
really helpful. I mean, just I think it was her kind of saying, you know, all the shit you've got going on, forget about that when you come in, when you walk through the door.
Oh my God. Emma, I was literally like, no, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to wipe my shoes. That's what I'm like.
All these years, I've not wiped my shoes on set. God damn.
Yes. Oh my God. I thought it was like, and you tap your lamp three times. Right. Metaphors, girl.
Yes, metaphor.
Got it. Before I let you go, and I can't wait to have you back and talk more as the season progresses and what you're producing. We're going to have you on when that happens.
Yes. Oh, please.
Of course. Can you just share a little known fact about yourself?
Okay. A little known fact. Okay. So the first thing that comes to mind is that I tweeted it the other day, actually. Not many people may know this, but I have a Build-A-Bear and I called it Tom Hiddleston. And there's no context there. That's the little known fact about me.
You knew what the future was going to bring.
I know. Tom Hiddleston, just love that man. So I had to name a bear after him. I'm sure that's the most ridiculous little known fact anyone has ever told.
When do you think you built that bear?
Oh, last year.
Not like when you were a little girl.
No. I just developed a big obsession with Loki and then Tom Hiddleston. And I also had a, this is so funny. I don't think Jeremy knows this because I never dared wear it, but I have a Chris Evans t-shirt. And I had a meeting with Chris Evans' agent last year when I was taking all these meetings, and I showed up in the Chris Evans t-shirt, who's, you know, his agent. And I took it to set, but I never dared wear it in front of Jeremy because I thought he'd be freaked out that I'm wearing his friends on his t-shirts. But I just love Avengers, man.
You're not wrong. Emma Laird, I wish you just all great things, and thank you for being so open and honest and wonderful, and I really appreciate you. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. I'm a fan. I've been listening to the podcast all week. You're wonderful.
I'm so
glad. It was such a pleasure.
One more thing. So many of you have asked, how do you donate to the podcast? Well, it could not be easier. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Instructions are clearly laid out, and I'm so grateful to you in advance for any donation you choose to make. But regardless, I have loved, loved, loved making the previous 200 and something episodes for you. I can't wait to make 200 more. I wish you a beautiful day. Stay healthy, be safe. Until next time.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So, there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
The episode was edited by Nicholas Klar. We recorded in New York City. The Little Known Facts theme song was written and sung by Georgia Famusa, with backup vocals by Caleb Famusa.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.